Hey, this is Kyle Eidelman from Southeast Christian Church, and I want to thank you for listening to the message today. As we open up the scriptures together, I pray that this message inspires you, challenges you, and is the right word at just the right time in your life. Enjoy the message.
We are in 1 Peter, going through this study of 1 and 2 Peter. This weekend's message is called That Homesick Feeling. And so I just want you, as we begin, to think of the last time you felt that way. You felt a little bit homesick. You know, that unmistakable feeling, that pit in your stomach that doesn't seem to go away. I was researching it this week, and one of the things I thought was pretty interesting is that it's not just a feeling. Like, I tend to identify homesickness as it's like an emotion. So if I'm feeling that way, I'll say, don't feel that way. But that's not how your brain processes homesickness. In fact, brain scans show that when you're homesick, your body processes that the same as it would physical pain. Like, your neural pathways process homesickness just like physical or mental pain. But here's the thing about homesickness. It only exists because there's a home to miss. You're only homesick if there is a home that you long for. And so that's what Peter's going to talk to us about in 1 Peter 3 and 4. To understand and interpret this book of the Bible correctly, you have to understand the concept of a controlling metaphor. Because Peter uses a controlling metaphor as a way to help us understand what it looks like to live life as followers of Jesus in this world. A controlling metaphor is a picture, it's an image that doesn't just inform us, but it forms us. A controlling metaphor will shape how you see things. It will navigate how you make decisions. It gives you, maybe a good way to think of it is, a controlling metaphor gives you a lens through which to see pretty much everything in your life. And the controlling metaphor of 1 Peter is the title of the series. It's temporary residence. That's who you are. You are a traveler, you're a sojourner, you're a foreigner living in a foreign land. And if you can get that metaphor in place, if you can look at your life through that lens, then a lot of things begin to make sense. Once we understand that metaphor, certain feelings that we have, like that feeling of not quite fitting in, that feeling of longing for something more, like you feel it sometimes when things don't work out, you feel it sometimes when things are successful, you achieve some goal you worked for, and yet you just know there's something more. Like that is a symptom of homesickness, of being made for more than this world. And so as a follower of Jesus, the more you understand who you are and where you really belong, the more homesick you can expect to feel. And so this controlling metaphor of temporary residence is foundational to interpreting and applying 1 Peter, to understand that when I see myself as a traveler, somebody who's passing through, when I understand that this life is a journey to an eternal destination, it just changes things. I look at my decisions differently, my relationships, my finances, suffering and struggles, I process those differently. I don't, for example, obsess over what other people think of me. I mean, why would I do that if I'm a temporary resident? That would be like trying to build your reputation in an airport between flights. Why would you do that? You're not there very long, you're leaving anyway. You don't get too wrapped up in what people think of you. It means I don't complain when things don't go my way. Complaining about this world not working perfectly is like complaining about your hotel room not being exactly like your house. You don't expect it to be. Why would you expect it to be? You don't live there. You're just staying there temporarily. It means I'm quick to forgive. I understand as a temporary resident that holding grudges is like traveling with extra luggage, an extra weight that I don't need. And temporary residents travel light by not holding on to blame and bitterness. It means I'm generous with my finances because spending all your money to renovate an Airbnb that you're only staying in for a week would be insane. Why would you do that? It means I don't get consumed by political outcomes because no earthly government and no earthly ruler is something I can put my hope in. For a temporary resident, it would be like expecting your Uber driver to provide meaning to life. Like, why would you look to that person to do that? And so this world is not our permanent home. That's the image. We're citizens of another kingdom. We're foreigners in a foreign land. So 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 13, who is going to harm you if you're eager to do good? Well, I can think of some people, right? Like, you might have some names. Actually, there's this person that you've really invested in and you've poured into and you've tried to do good to them, and you don't even know why, but they have ghosted you, or they've written you off, or they've gossiped about you. They've caused hurt to you. And Peter's writing to people who are trying to do good, but in return for their good, they're experiencing persecution. So Peter says, look, even if you should suffer for what is right, even if you do have people who are hurting you, even though you're doing good, you're blessed for that. There's a blessing in it, and don't live being afraid of their threats. Don't be frightened on this journey that you're on. And so, again, remember who he's writing to. He's writing to believers who've been scattered across what is modern-day Turkey and are experiencing pretty severe persecution. And as he writes to them about their suffering, what he doesn't do is he doesn't say, hey, God's gonna make sure your problems all go away. God's, now that you're traveling with God, he's gonna make sure that there's not any more pain or any more suffering, that this life is just gonna be smooth sailing. That's not what he does. And instead, he acknowledges that for them, as followers of Jesus, suffering is real. And then he frames, or rather maybe he reframes, suffering through this metaphor of being a temporary resident, that suffering in this world is not it's not evidence that something is terribly wrong between us and God. It's confirmation that we don't fully belong here, that this world isn't our home. Verse 15, 16. But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord, and always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you for the reason that you have hope. Like, as you deal with suffering and struggle, and the people, like the natives, see how you navigate that as a foreigner in a foreign land, they're gonna be like, well, that's different. Like, I couldn't deal with it the way they're dealing with. I don't understand where they're finding peace and hope in the midst of this kind of loss. So when they ask you about it, Peter says, be ready to give an answer. Be ready to explain to them where your hope is, but do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience, so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ, that they'll be ashamed of their slander. And so in the middle of their suffering, Peter gives them a different focus. Now, this only works if you understand that you're a temporary resident. Because if you think of yourself as a permanent resident, then any kind of suffering will feel overwhelming to you because this is all there is. But if you see that this is just a trip, like you're just on this journey, then you're able to get a bigger picture. And if you get this bigger picture, you're concerned about more than your immediate comfort. You are concerned about being a witness. So Peter says, in the midst of your suffering, see it as an opportunity to show people where your hope really lies, to be a witness. One of my heroes of the faith around here is Debbie Carper. Debbie served as an administrative assistant in the preaching department for like more than 20 years, and she and her husband, Chris, helped lead our pre-marriage mentor program. But she has had a difficult few years health-wise, some health challenges, but was kind of on the other side of that and doing better. And then last week, I get this text from her, and here's what she said. Hey, Kyle, on Thursday, I fell on a hiking trail and ended up breaking my leg pretty badly. 12 firemen, EMTs, park personnel, and paramedics had to hike me out in a stretcher. I really would appreciate your prayers. My surgery is late tomorrow. Thank you. And I texted her back. I am so sorry that this has happened. And then I said, I'll pray for your comfort and your quick recovery. That's what I said. Debbie, I'm going to be praying for your comfort and your quick recovery. And then here's what she texted back to me. Thank you, Kyle. The Lord's kept me calm and given me a peaceful spirit for the most part. I'm grateful. God's presence has made all the difference. I just want to be a witness. Maybe you'd be willing to pray for that. But I was going to say that. That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, I'm praying for your comfort. I'm praying for your quick recovery. And I'm praying that you would be a witness. As a temporary resident, she has an awareness that there's something at stake greater than her own comfort. Doesn't mean she isn't praying for comfort. Doesn't mean we don't ask God to take away that pain. But there's something bigger at play. There's an opportunity to be a witness. Pray that I can be a witness. And so Peter's reminding them, look, you have an opportunity here to point people to Jesus. But here's something to remember. They aren't, and I think this is significant, they aren't just experiencing suffering, but suffering is being done to them. How many of you know that's different? Like, it's not just life happening. Somebody's doing it to you. Somebody is causing this pain in your life. Verse 17, Peter writes to them, it's better if it's God's will to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. Well, yeah, okay. I mean, I'm not gonna argue with that. If suffering is just part of life, then I'd rather suffer for doing good than for doing evil. But here's really what he's underlining for us, is that when you suffer, it's not evidence of your evil life. It's not evidence necessarily that things are out of alignment with God. Sometimes we can feel that way. When I'm suffering, what did I do to make God mad? Well, what did I do? What do I need to fix so that God's favor will return, that I'll be happy and healthy? What did I do wrong? And Peter's like, no. Like, that's not necessarily what suffering means. It doesn't necessarily mean you're out of alignment with God's will. And to give evidence of this, he points to Jesus. Like, Jesus was perfect. And did he suffer? Verse 18, for Christ also suffered. He also suffered once for sins. And by the way, not his own sins, but your sins. The righteous for the unrighteous to bring you to God. That Jesus suffered, that was part of his story. And he suffered for you. He was put to death in the body, but made alive in the spirit. And so what Peter does, he says, look, here's the journey that Jesus had. Here's the trip that he took. And when Jesus traveled through this life, he didn't go around suffering, he went through suffering. So if you're following Jesus, if you're a follower of Jesus, then don't be surprised if your trip doesn't take you around suffering, but takes you through suffering. And that was true for Jesus. Don't be surprised if that's true for you. And then after being made alive, it says he, Jesus, went and made proclamation to the imprisoned spirits, to those who were disobedient long ago when God waited patiently in the days of Noah while the ark was being built. Well, that kind of comes out of nowhere. Like, what's that mean? He went and made proclamation to the imprisoned spirits. This is one of the most debated passages in the New Testament. There's no shortage of theories or ideas about what it might mean. But here's what's clear. After his resurrection, Jesus proclaimed his victory to those who had opposed God in ancient times. I don't know exactly what that means or what that looks like, but even the spiritual forces that seemed triumphant in Noah's day when wickedness covered the earth, even they heard from Jesus the good news that he had won a victory over death. And Peter goes on to say, in the ark, only a few people, 8 in all, were saved through water. And this water symbolizes baptism that now saves you also, not the removal of dirt from the body, but the pledge of a clear conscience towards God. It saves you by the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's the power. It's the power of Jesus that saves you, who's gone into heaven and is at God's right hand with angels, authorities, powers, and powers in submission to him. And so Peter makes a connection. That seems strange. He connects Noah's flood to our baptism. So it seems like a strange comparison. Verse 20, only a few people, 8 in all, it says, were saved through the water. And what seems off there, I read it and reread it. I'm like, what seems out of place here? I think the preposition seems weird. They were saved through water. But shouldn't say they were saved from water. And so here's what's happening. I think this is the point Peter's making, that the very thing that brought judgment and death to the world also was a means of life and salvation. Like, water signifies death, but it's through that dying that salvation comes, and dying to yourself and being raised to walk in the life that Jesus has for you. And so when you walk into the waters of baptism, you're saying, I'm dying to my old identity. That's being buried in the water, and then you're being raised to a new life. That's through Jesus. It's by the power of the resurrection. It's not because there's magical water. It's because of Jesus. That's what gives it power. And here's one way to think of it. Again, looking at it through the lens of our controlling metaphor, the waters of baptism mark the boundary between your old home and your new citizenship. When you're baptized, it is a way of saying, I belonged to this world, and then you come out of the water as someone. This is not your true home. In fact, the word pledge here was often used in the ancient world as a formal declaration, like as a legal agreement. So when someone's being baptized, think of it as their way of signing citizenship papers. that where they're saying, or they're making a public declaration of a change of citizenship, a change of allegiance. Significant for us, really significant for believers in the first century, especially those under Caesar, Rome. They're saying, I am no longer someone living with a primary allegiance to Caesar. My primary citizenship is now in heaven, and my allegiance is to Jesus. Chapter 4, verse 1 and 2. Therefore, since Christ suffered in his body, military language here, arm yourselves with the same attitude. Like, be prepared. Christ suffered. Suffering's going to come your way, and you need to understand facing that suffering without putting on armor would be foolish. So arm yourself, and what's he say? With the same attitude of Jesus who suffered. Well, what was the attitude of Jesus? Well, he was never a victim. Now, Jesus could be vulnerable. Like, Jesus could say to his closest followers, my soul is overwhelmed to the point of death. Will you pray for me? But he wasn't a victim. Like, he could share his burdens and share his struggles and the heaviness of what he was going through without feeling sorry for himself. The attitude of Jesus was that he carried no bitterness, right? We see this when suffering was done to him. How does he respond? Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. His response is not blame and bitterness. It's grace and it's mercy. That was his attitude. Now, if you don't arm yourself with that, when suffering is done to you, you're not going to respond this way. Like, the human side of you will not respond. But if you arm yourself, if you're prepared for it, when it comes, you can say, okay, I'm ready for this. I know how Jesus responded, and here's how I'm going to respond. And then Jesus was submissive. When suffering came, he acknowledged, this isn't what I want. God, take this cup from me. Take away this suffering. If there's another way around this, then let's take that way. But then what did he say? Not my will, but yours be done. And so he was submissive even in the suffering. And so when you have that homesick feeling, it's this way of waking up your soul to the fact that this world isn't your home, that you're a temporary resident. As we finish with this, what I want to do is I just want to give you kind of highlight three realities to carry with you. If you think of yourself as a traveler and you've got your carrying bag, like, just three things to tuck in there to carry with you on this journey through life. Here's the first thing, is that homesickness highlights where we truly belong. It brings our attention to something that's eternal. So imagine you leave home for like a few months, like you leave your friends, your family, your house, your dog, like the whole thing. If after a few months you don't miss them at all, like you're loving life and they've never even crossed your mind, and there's something wrong, right? It would be natural, and in fact, it would be healthy for you to be homesick. And when you say goodbye to someone here on earth and you know that their home is in heaven, it's natural that you're gonna have this homesickness that often stays with you, and then it gets stronger sometimes, like over the holidays or maybe over a certain birthday or anniversary. And it's not something to run from, it's something to lean into, because it's reminding your soul that your home isn't here. Look at verse 3 and 4. For you have spent enough time in the past doing what pagans choose to do, living in debauchery, lust, drunkenness, orgies, carousing, detestable idolatry. They are surprised that you don't join them in their reckless, wild living, and they heap abuse on you. Like, for a long time, you lived as residents of this earth, and you did what the natives do. You lived the way that they live, but you don't live that way anymore. Like, there was a time, perhaps, where it felt right at home here. Like, their values and their practices were your values and your, but not anymore. Like, now you are a foreigner. And so you're living with this tension of different values and different priorities and different allegiances. And so when that homesickness comes, it's a reminder, like, I'm supposed to live different. I'm not supposed to be like everybody else. Second, homesickness is temporary. Look at verse 7. It says, the end of all things is near, therefore be alert and sober-minded so that you may pray. I just want us to look at this one sentence here. The end of all things is near. What is your emotional response to that verse? Because when he writes it, he's writing it not to scare them, but to give them hope. Now, so if you read the end of all things is near, and you kind of focus on that truth, and your response is fear, if your response is like anxiety, like, wait, I don't have much time left, that's an indication that maybe this world has become too much of a home for you. If, on the other hand, you read the end of all things is near and you're like, thank you, Jesus. It's an awareness that you're putting your hope in heaven. Like more and more, you're living like this world is not your home. And so Peter says, remember, the end of all things is near. Your homesickness is temporary. Lastly, homesickness shapes how we live while we're here. That when we feel homesick, it is an opportunity for us to be intentional with our temporary home, to remind us that I need to make the most of this time because it doesn't last long. Look at verses 8 and following. Above all else, love each other deeply, because love covers a multitude of sins, and offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. And each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. And if anyone speaks, they should do so as one who speaks the very words of God. And if anyone serves, they should do so with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. And so even though we're temporary residents, even though you're not here long, Peter says, don't let that create in you this mentality to withdraw. Have you ever been away from home long enough that homesickness comes and your tendency is towards isolation? You think to yourself, I'm not here that long and I don't feel like being around anybody. Nobody's gonna remember me anyway. And so instead of engaging, you withdraw. And Peter's saying, look, no, it's the opposite that should be happening. The more aware you become of your temporary residence here on earth, the more you should understand that even though this world's not your home, it is your assignment. And it should cause you to lean in to be faithful stewards of God's grace, he says, to love each other deeply. And then verse 12, dear friends, do not be surprised at this fiery ordeal that has come on you to test you as though something strange were happening. Don't be surprised. Don't think it's strange that you're going through some difficult and challenging times. Imagine it this way. Imagine you're getting ready to board a flight to Hawaii and you're in the gate area. And you see the pilot walking through the gate area going to the plane, and he sees you and he calls you over. He says, hey, come here real quick. I wanna say something to you. You're like, me? He's like, yeah, come here. And you go over to him and you look down, his name tag's Peter. It's Peter the pilot. And Peter says to you, hey, look, we're getting ready to get on this plane. I want you to know something. I just looked at the radar. It's gonna be a rough flight. Like, I'm just telling you, there's gonna be all kinds of turbulence, like the whole time, you just need to expect it. So I'm telling you this now for a couple reasons, the pilot says. First of all, I don't want you freaking out up there. I don't need that. People around you don't need that. I don't want you making a whole thing out of it. Like, it's gonna happen. So buckle up and just know that it's a trip. We're not gonna be up here that long. We're gonna be in Hawaii soon. So just keep your mind focused on where we're gonna land and just expect it. And he starts to walk down the runway. He's like, hey, by the way, too, I just so you know, we don't serve honey roasted peanuts on this flight. Like, we just have the salted kinds. I just trying to give you a heads up. So when they come and you ask for honey roasted peanuts and you don't get it, just don't be surprised by that, because we don't have them. I'll see you when we land in Hawaii. And you get on the plane and it takes off and the turbulence starts to come. And at first you get upset. And you're like, oh, wait, Peter told me this was gonna happen. Peter said that this was part of the trip. It's okay. I shouldn't be surprised by what's happening to me. We're gonna be in Hawaii soon. I don't mean to simplify or minimize the pain and the suffering of this world, but this is what Peter is saying to these foreigners. Like, hey, don't be surprised if on this journey, on this trip called life, things are gonna be a little bit rough. There's gonna be some turbulence. Instead, Peter says, rejoice. Rejoice in as much as you participate in the sufferings of Christ, so that you may be overjoyed when his glory is revealed. If you're insulted because of the name of Christ, you're blessed, for the spirit of glory and of God rests on you. And so Peter says, it's an opportunity to be a witness, and he says it's an opportunity to participate in the sufferings of Christ. And so it's interesting, like this word participate, it carries with it that idea of, oh, I get to do this. It's an opportunity. It's a privilege. And that word participate is in the Greek koinonia. It's fellowship, it's closeness, it's intimacy that you have in your suffering and opportunity to identify with Jesus in a depth that you don't any other way. And the room is full of people who would say they know Jesus now in a way they never thought they could before, because in their suffering, he walked with them. They participated in it together. And so when that happens to you, just understand it is an opportunity to draw closer to Jesus. So don't you push him away. Draw near to him. And that's the hope we have as temporary residents, that the shadow will pass and darkness gives way to dawn, the suffering will end, and our home is waiting.
Thanks for listening. If today's message made you realize you need to take your next step with Jesus, we would love to help you with that. You can connect with us on any of our social media platforms throughout the week or visit our website at southeastchristian.org. And if you want to hear more content like this, you can check out our sermons podcast or our One at a Time podcast. Both can be found everywhere podcasts are available. Have a great week.